system. And I speak to you in my role as Assistant Commissioner of the New York City Department of Health. None of the previous comments were related to that role. So this reflects some work, and I have no disclosures to report, as you will see on the slide in 30 seconds. So I'd also like to acknowledge my colleagues who are in the office here. Dorothy Neal, Ms. Neal, who is the nurse who actually did the work I'm talking about and is out in the housing units all the time. Louise Cohen, my former boss, Deputy Commissioner, who is now with Public Health Solutions, and Cynthia Summers, who actually oversees the evaluation of this project. So we have a robust representation here, which is good. So we in the jail system introduced about a year and a half ago a new approach to caring for people with mental illness who are in mental observation units. These are places where there's a high level of care where you need special housing areas. And basically what it comes down to is we took the care that happens in the clinics and we put it into the housing areas. So we took the providers, we put them out there. In doing that, which was a mental health intervention, we also decided to put somebody in to look at the medical case management of these patients. And Ms. Neal was kind of the tip of the spear there because she was the one that we tasked to go out, look at what's going on with the medical care of these patients who find themselves in mental observation areas. Now, her training is as a mental health nurse, actually, so she did a lot that has to do with mental health care, but the primary goal of this intervention was to look at what kind of medical care do we get in these areas and what can we do to promote better medical care for people who are seriously mentally ill. No disclosures to report. So generally speaking, I think nobody is surprised by this. There's a lot of medical and mental health comorbidities. I think that the quote I like to use is, the reason people who are seriously mentally ill live 20 years less is not because they kill themselves. It's because they have bad care for their medical problems. Some of that 20-year difference, I'm sure, is attributable to suicide, but that's not most of it. I was at an autopsy not that long ago with a woman in her 40s, and a medical examiner said to me, that is the gut of a 70-year-old. And wasn't even really terribly related to the reason she passed away, but the fact is people with mental illness get horrible medical care for 1,000 reasons. And the notion of this intervention that Ms. Neal's been doing is that to the extent we set up special places for high levels of one kind of care, we need to make sure we haven't messed up all the other care that's needed. And that's this last bullet, is that anything in corrections, anything special for one purpose may decrease the risk that you're going to get something else done. So we often are at loggerheads with corrections and security, the detaining authorities, because they create special settings for things to happen, special levels of security. And so we know that once you make throw a wall around something and call it something besides regular general population, it's going to make it hard for you to get your care in there if that's a special housing unit for security-related purposes. What we need to remember is we do it ourselves, right? We may create this special mental health area, and we may create more access problems for the medical care. So this is the New York City jail system. I will also acknowledge my colleagues from New York City and the Transitional Healthcare Coordination who loaned us the slides. So Allison Jordan and Paul Scherer, who are here for their talks. But this is, we see Rikers, and then we see the two borough houses, the barge, which is at the top there, and over on the right, the formerly Bernard Carrick, now the Manhattan Detention Center. And next year we'll have to add a third because we're going to be opening up Brooklyn House soon. So one more setting to put on the map. So the thing, you'll see this map again because I drew some areas, but Rikers has 9 jails on it. These 9 jails, except for the women's jail and the jail for men who are sentenced, they're like special things. So this jail has this special area, this jail has that special area. And so if you look at just how spread out everything is, it just creates an enormous problem about access, about getting resources to people that need it. So this is what we just said, about 80,000 admissions a year. We put in AMKC. So AMKC is the largest jail. It has 2,500 people in it at any one time. It's also where we have the greatest share of our people in these mental observation units. It's where we rolled out this new mental health program, and it's where Ms. Neal has been going into these new mental health programming units to do case management. And then we, as the DOH, are responsible for all aspects of medical, mental health, dental care. So unlike most settings in the world where if you find a doctor or a nurse or anybody who cares about discharge planning in a jail or prison or a detention center and you get to their boss, this boss, this boss, eventually you're going to find somebody in a uniform who works for the sheriff's department or Department of Corrections or the Army or whoever. So the New York City Charter has built in this notion that the Department of Health knows about health, so we're in charge of health. The Department of Corrections knows about security, they're in charge of that. It's a built-in cooperative slash adversarial relationship, and we are also fortunate to have Bobby Cohen here, who sits on the Board of Corrections, that oversees this whole stew. So, in our setting, about a third of men and almost half of women come into the mental health services. Now, that doesn't mean that all these people go into one of these mental observation areas. Most of these folks actually are pretty stable. They may be on a little bit of therapy, or like either pharmaco or talk therapy for some sort of anxiety or depression. But what's the thing I think that's really startling about this is that anything you look at in jails and prisons, but especially jails, the burden is borne disproportionately by women as opposed to men for all the bad sequelae of poverty and of the life that people lead out in the community in poor areas. And so it's just stark. Same thing with substance abuse when we look at it. It's just much, much higher rates among women than men. This intervention we now have rolled out to the women, but I'm going to be talking about the intervention as we rolled it out in a male facility. So of the people I talked about in the first bullet, a smaller number of those are going to need to go to some special housing area. So they're going to need such a level of care that they need to be away from general population. We need to have access to them with more intensive, both social workers, psychologists, and psychiatrists. We need to have access to our an emergency psychiatric intervention when we need it. But this MO housing that I'm going to refer to is what that is. That's our higher level of housing care for people with serious mental illness. So these circles here just represent some of the mental observation housing areas around the system. I just point that out to show you that, like everything else, it's fragmented. So we have a mental observation area here, we have one there. These are special areas, and like anything else, when we have, our goal has always been to get all of these mental observation areas integrated into one jail so we can have all the resources we need, we can have them all the time. Right now, as it stands, we've got these higher level of mental health care. We have that higher level of mental health care in multiple areas. So this is the intervention, but basically what it came down to is Ms. Neal took two housing areas, and she intensively case managed the medical problems of the people in those housing areas. So we traditionally had both our mental health and our medical care in the clinics. People would come out to clinic to go to see their psychiatrist. They come out to see their medical provider as well. You can see that half the people had one chronic medical problem, and that one-fifth of them had more than one chronic medical problem. So there are five of these steps. So just read the highest level. So the role of this case manager was first for each patient who comes into this mental health. So this two areas, we're talking a couple hundred people here. So in these two housing areas, the role of the case manager is to review the electronic health record, which we have in all our jails, for every person, to then see the person in the housing area. And this is the crux of our global intervention, was to see people in the housing areas. You can see the details of what we're talking to the person about. Then to go back and meet with both medical and mental health staff, coordinate services, and also to meet with the Department of Corrections. So Ms. Neal, the case manager in this role, is basically starting with the record, going to the patient, then going to all the people who own care for the patient or own responsibility for the care of the patient, drawing a circle all the way around back to feeding back to the patient. So this sounds like a very standard case management approach. It is. It, however, is something that does not happen a lot in jails. We have really fragmented care, particularly in places where we've put people just for one purpose. So this is the monitoring piece, but basically just following up to make sure the recommendations that Ms. Neal made were followed. This is a flowchart, but I think the only thing I want to point out here is that now that we have an electronic health record, when Ms. Neal sees the patient and creates some record of her interaction with the patient or any case manager who does this, we now have that in the electronic health record. So it's a way for us to document that, you know what, this person's been seen by medical, they've been seen by mental health, somebody found that there's an incongruity, that there's a problem, and the person missed their specialty appointment or they missed this mental health unit. We now have somebody who connects the dots in the electronic health record. Then for subsequent providers, the expectation is, and this is the upside if it works, is it brings the integration of care back to the patient so that subsequent encounters then can rely on that integration of care. So these are some data looking pre and post, and I think there's about 750 patients pre and post this intervention. I'll point out that the case management here, pre and post case management, this also includes, by the way, the mental health intervention of bringing the mental health care out. So we ascribe some of this to Ms. Neal and the case management and some of this to bringing the mental health care into the housing areas and doing that. So the top two are the ones that I want to point out is that it looks that in the post we have a reduction in injuries. We're paying a lot of attention to injuries in the New York City jail system. Actually, Louise Cohen's going to be giving a talk on Wednesday about some data we've collected about injury surveillance in the jail system. But what's interesting is we see injuries going down and we see medical visits going up. And so I think that this is what we would have hoped for, because the notion is, and I think that Ms. Neal found, you know, she found some really terrifying cases, but basically we found that people that we had put into our mental observation areas to get this high level of mental health care were often getting completely missed in their medical care. And so we were doing, these are our sickest patients from a medical standpoint, and we were often doing worse with them than everybody else. So it's really a conundrum. Because we've given them this label and these extra services, we ended up, I think, and this is not uncommon in jails, doing them a disservice for this whole other facet of their care or their well-being. So the communication piece obviously is important. I think that people who are familiar with the New York State private settlement agreement, which had to do with getting people who were mentally ill out of isolation or segregation housing, that settlement, one of the key focuses was it just mandated communication. It said, in addition to trying to get people out of isolation, what it said was medical people have to talk to corrections people and they have to talk to mental health people. And it said, as part of this agreement, you must do this. And so that, because without it, you are not going to, in that case, the aim was to get people out of segregation setting. For our instance here is to get people better care for their medical problems. In the middle bullet there, I mentioned the first part that's underlined, which is that, you know, people with mental illness were less likely to be produced to medical care. But then this is really a circular problem. So then when their medical problems become poorly treated, when their diabetes goes out of control, and when they have two or three hospital runs for hyperglycemia, then that will mess up their mental health care, which is the whole point we put them in there in the first place. So I think that we found quite a few cautionary tales on this that, you know, it's revealing that the amount of problems we created ourselves by coming up with a higher level of care. I think that this is, you know, there's an upside to this, obviously, for these patients. Conversely, we've spent a lot of time in our infirmary, our medical infirmary, and we find just the yang to the yin, which is that in that place where we're spending all this effort, we have 100 people in this infirmary that we're focusing on high levels of medical care. We often do not do a great job of integrating their mental health care. We didn't. We do much better now that we're mandating this type of case management approach, but it's stunning how many things we break in attempting to fix something else. So that is the end of the presentation, I want to thank Ms. Neal for having. I mean, she's the one that has labored in these housing areas. She's done a fantastic job. She is the one, I will say, the toughest thing about these programs is you have to have somebody that can walk in and ruffle everybody's feathers. So mental health complains that she interrupts their groups. Medical says, why is she bringing all these problems to us? It's a mental health area. DOC says, why are you creating havoc, talking about access and sick call and medical follow-ups? And, you know, now everybody sees the virtue in this. But for the first several months, it was a lot of emails that we get basically complaining about all of this stuff that we're doing. And so the credit really is to her and her fortitude in pursuing this. And our goal is, how do we find more people to do this, you know, in all of these specialized areas where we have patients with high needs. So thanks to you, Matthew. Thanks.